Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories, told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on March 21st, 2013 at the Top Hat. This edition of Tell Us Something features 10 storytellers telling a story based upon the theme, extremes. This week's story comes to us from Barry Gordon and is titled Norwegian Breakfast. Thank you for listening.
Well, I have to tell you, the green room is empty. There's not a lot of people back there right now, but I had to come that way for a reason. I'd like to thank Mark for having this venue, and I'd like to thank Joyce for, if we didn't have Joyce, we would have no sidewalks in Missoula. So my story starts out in Missoula. I was 16 years old, and my father started the Environmental Studies Department at the University of Montana years ago, and we always went back and forth over the years, and one day when I told him that I was going to go be a mountain man up in the mountains and live forever off of small grasses and vegetations, he decided to take me out back and kick my ass. So I decided to go to Alaska and prove him wrong. Well, I went to Alaska, and I spent the first 4 years working my ass off. I couldn't get on a fishing boat. There was no way. Everybody that was up there had the jobs. I was either in a cannery or I was working on the docks or I was doing something. And one day I spotted a net loft. And in the net loft were five beautiful ladies that were mending nets. And I said to myself, well, I'm going to go up there and get a job. So I went up there and I went into the net loft, introduced myself to the five married women. And within a week, I had a job on a fishing boat. I don't know how that works, but I didn't even get to learn how to mend net. I got about halfway through the lessons, and it was all over. So after 3 years, I was in working with an old guy. I didn't get a great job. I didn't get a highline job. I got a mediocre job, and the job was with a guy by the name of Leif Stromdahl. He was 79. He'd been fishing for 60 years. He was very good at it, but he was very constant. He wasn't one of those guys that would take chances. He was a Norwegian. He was superstitious. And superstitious men don't take chances. So my first lesson was walking down to the boat with my new girlfriend, sitting her on the side of the boat and telling her about my new job. Leif came down. We didn't go fishing for a week because you don't have girlfriends on the boat. I said, why is that, Leif? And he said, well, when there's a woman on the boat needs to rest for 7 days. And I said, okay. So everybody else is condemning me for all these things that I'm doing. Then I left the bucket upright on the boat. That's not good either because the bucket will fill with water and the boat will sink. So I put the bucket upside down. Everything was fine. So after 2 years of fishing with Leif, I was finally kind of a seasoned fisherman. And one day we took off 8 hours later than everybody else because you never leave Petersburg on a low tide. You always leave Petersburg, Alaska on a high tide because if you don't, you will sink. So we leave and we're going to a place called Saginaw Bay. Now, Saginaw Bay is just north of Petersburg, at the northern end of an island that's right north of Midkoff. And what we were going after were 100,000 silver salmon. Well, a lot of the fishermen in Petersburg bypass that. There's other fisheries going on in southeast Alaska, and usually Saginaw Bay is very crowded. And you don't want to just go in there. There's not a room. There's room for maybe 14 boats. So we go in and we anchor up. Everybody's already anchored up. The fish are jumping. Everything's happening. incredibly fast. We have six guys in the boat. We've got Leif, who's 79. We've got George, who's 78. We've got Bob, who is an alcoholic, and he's looks like he's 94, but he's really 65. We've got me, we've got John, and we've got a new guy that is Leif's nephew, who had to come to work in Alaska for his first year. So we sit there and we have dinner, and usually it's boiled salmon, or you can have semi-boiled salmon, or you can have really boiled salmon. And it's usually stuff that's left from the last opening that we were on. So we had boiled salmon that night, and we talked about our options and everything else, and we looked at all the rest of the boats in the bay. And the bay was full of some of the big highliners, and we knew we were going to have to be quick. Well, in the morning, you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you start jogging. The opening doesn't happen until 7. But at 4 o'clock, you start maneuvering like a bunch of giant penises going through the water. And everybody's trying to get their spot. And they're all trying to get into one position or another just to make that first set. It's just going to be an incredible set. You're going to catch 10,000 coho salmon in one set. Everybody's going to make $10,000. You're going to go home. It's going to be great. So we're maneuvering. We're going back and forth. And what happens? Right at 7 o'clock, Leif turns toward the shore. All the fish are out here, and Leif turns toward the shore. He's 79 years old. He's a Norwegian. He goes toward the shore, and we're all looking at the fish out here in the middle of the thing. All the boats are going, and Leif goes right to the shore, and he throws Bob, who's the skiff man. Well, let me tell you about what happens on a salmon boat. You've got three parts of a salmon boat, or four parts. You've got the boat, you've got the cork line, you've got the net, and you've got the lead line. And they're all stacked across the top of the back of the boat. So Leif goes toward the shore, and we're all watching the rest of the boats go out toward the fish. And we're going, what the hell? What the hell? Leif lets Bob go, turns the skiff loose. Well, the net comes off the back of the boat. And when he puts the horses to that boat, we're doing about, when the net's going off with the skiff pulling at the same time and the net's dropping into the water, we're doing about, the net's doing about 20 miles an hour. And the lead line's dropping. The lead line weighs about 18 pounds every 2 feet. We're starting to set. We're making our set. And I'm just standing there. Everybody on the deck standing there going, what the hell? The fish are out there. Well, with all the commotion out there, all the fish turned into the shoreline, and Leif saw this coming. So I'm on the deck, and I'm handling a purse line that goes through, or out of a bucket. It goes through my hands, and I'm directing it through these rings, and I'm making sure that it doesn't flip over the rings. Well, the purse line is about 1,600 feet long, so you can't have one continuous piece of rope. It costs you an enormous amount of money. You have to put them together with these things called figure eights. And the way you put them together is you put a little thing called a figure eight on it, and you put a little pipe clamp through it, a little pipe cleaner, a thing you clean your pipe with. If in case it hits your hand or anything, it won't grab you. Well, Denny, the new guy on the boat, Leif's nephew, had decided to put a big wire in that thing. So as it came through my hand, it went into my wrist. And it dragged me into the back of the rings. My arm went into the rings. And then all of a sudden, I'm hung up in the bridles. And I got out of it, ripped away from my arm, and I jumped up in the bridles, and I started jumping rope. Now, remember, I'm not as big as I was then, but I was 23 and I was pretty agile. The bridle, which is coming off the lead line, it connects the lead to the net, pulls me to the back of the boat. And there's an edge on the back of the boat about this high. And my leg goes against it, and the bridle is holding my leg. And I could feel within 4 or 5 seconds, my leg was going to snap, and I was going over. So I decided, what the hell? I swam at the University of Montana for the Grizz swim team for years. For the younger ones when we were young. I just said, hell with it, I'll go off the back of the boat. And I also lived on an island, which helps. But anyway, so I flipped off the back of the boat. When I did that, I turned a perfect knot on my hip wader, and I had a long coat on. In those days, we wore hip waders because of all the fish we'd bring aboard. You didn't want the jellyfish to get on your legs, so you'd wear hip waders, and you'd wear a long trench coat. Well, it caught me, and I went over. And the first thing I did when I went over is I grabbed a bunch of air in my coat. And I put all this air up in the back of my shoulders, and I tightened my coat up as fast as I could because I knew I was caught. Then I went down, and I started going down. And then I realized that I couldn't get my knives out because I just buttoned my coat up. And I had two knives, one on each side. I had two on a hip, and I had one in my pocket. I had 5 knives on me altogether. So what I did is I reached for the first one, and I dropped it. And I was going down. And lead line at 13 pounds every 2 feet is dropping like a rocket. And I'm seeing light disappearing from the top of me. And I knew I was in trouble, and I was trying to cut the bridle off my leg. So what I did instead is I kind of got sideways, and I cut my hip wader off my leg. And I ended up cutting my left leg quite severely on the bottom. Well, finally I freed myself. And I started to ascend because of the air in my coat. And I'm about 75 feet. And I start going up, and I'm paddling. And I'm young, I've got big lungs, I'm going. And I'm going to the surface, and I get to about 30 feet or somewhere in there, and I run out of gas. And I'm still kicking, but I'm not able to move my arms. So I think to myself, I'm looking, and I can see the light. But then I started noticing something around me that was really spectacular. As I'd left the lead line below me, and the net was coming down, I started seeing all these fish. And they were everywhere. And they were coming in, and they were all around me, and they're swimming around me, and I'm coming up, and I'm looking at the lights, and I'm just going, God, I gotta get to the surface. And I finally got there, but it wasn't without incredible... My legs gave up. Everything gave up. And I got to the surface, and I perched my lips when I finally gave that last thrust, and I got that little bit of air. And when I got that, I sunk. And you would think you would float, but I sunk just out of relief. I just sunk for a second, and I went, all right, and I got another wind. I went back up. I got another breath. Then I got another breath. Then I was on the surface. Then I grabbed more air in my coat. I turned around, and when you're setting with a seine boat, the boat can't stop and just come back and pick you up because there's all this net hanging off the back of it. If you put it in reverse, the set would be over. We'd be getting, you know, net out of his prop for hours. And so I'm on the surface, and I look over, and George is freaking out. He's the deck boss. And he won't go near either corner. He pees in the middle of the deck all the time because he can't swim. So he's sitting there on the deck and he's going, Jesus Christ, get the corks, grab the corks. And Leif's standing up there holding his head, and he can't even believe that I've even come up after that much time. And Denny's on the back of the boat trying to pull the net in by hand. And it's his first year, but that's all right. It only weighs 100,000 pounds. So, and John's just standing there going, see you later, Barry. I'm going to get half your crew share. So if you ever saw The Perfect Storm when the guy went over and all those guys dived off and saved him, doesn't happen. So I get away from the boat, and all these fish are coming at me. And Bob somehow Leif had signaled to Bob, who was a skiff man, to buoy off his end of the net and to come back and pick me up in the skiff. And I was sitting there, when I came to the surface, I could see Bob coming and I'm waving him back because I knew I was okay. Because I swam all my life. I was going, go back, because I had fish everywhere around me. So I ran, I swam over to the cork line and started pulling myself up to the boat. Bob turned around, went back and got his end of his net, hooked it back up to a skiff and went to shore. And the fish were still in the middle of the net, and all these boats had scared these fish along the shoreline when they all set. So Leif, what happened is I got up to the side of the boat. They put a strap over. They put a strap around me, and there's a hydromatic. It's a hydraulic winch that pulled me aboard. I jumped on. Once I got on deck, I ran, went down to the forecastle, put on new boots, new half a pair of rain gear. I didn't have a top because mine was on the deck somewhere. I came back up, got the purse line. We started pursing, and we got about 8,000 salmon. It was an incredible set. We got one of the biggest sets in the whole bay. And that night, when we got done, we fished, we made four more sets. Leif, every time he saw me on deck, would turn around and he would walk away. And I would like, hey, Leif, I'm sorry about, you know, I'm really sorry about, he'd just turn and walk away. The next day, it was a two-day fishery. Next morning, I came into the galley to have breakfast. Leif got up and he walked away. And I asked George, I said, what's going on with Leif? And he said, he thinks you're dead. He's a Norwegian. And I said, well, I'm not dead because I'm on the boat and I'm obviously having breakfast. And he goes, no, Leif doesn't believe that. So we got done with our fishery and we're headed to Petersburg. And it's a 14-hour run. And we're going to Petersburg. And it was, we'd been all night the night before, and in the morning I get up, and I walk into the galley, and Leif is sitting there at the table. And I'm thinking, okay, he's just going to get up and go take the wheel or go to his bunk. Well, he doesn't. He sits there, and he's eating a bowl of Cheerios. And he's got a honey bear. And he's squeezing the honey bear into the middle of the Cheerio rounds, and he's sinking them. And I'm like watching him, and I'm trying to get some food for myself, and he's sitting there sinking these Cheerios, and he's doing a bunch of them. I mean, he's like, shh, 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 shh. And I'm just quiet. I'm thinking, what's he doing? And then he just said, hey, Barry, he says, isn't this the cutest thing you've ever seen in your life? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, look at this, watch this, shh. The Cheerio would get full of honey and it'd just disappear. And I said, yeah, that's pretty amazing, Leif. That's, I think I can do that. But, anyway, so we get to town. We clean the boat, we clean the hold. And one thing Leif had that was wonderful for us fishing guys is we didn't have refrigerated seawater. We had to actually get in the hold and pitch our fish out by hand. We didn't have any water that went in there, but Leif had the foresight to take four Playboy penouts, I mean, these big, giant foldouts, and put them at the bottom of the hold so that when we got done fishing and we cleaned the hold, we could look at these girls that were naked on the bottom of the boat. And that was the Norwegian way of getting that hold clean. As long as we got that thing clean, that was a really good deal. So he did that, and we got the boat cleaned, and I went into town that day, and I had time off. I had 2 days off, and I went into town, and I walk into Irene's Cafe, where all the fishing captains sit on a corner, and they're sitting there. And I walked through the door, and all I hear was, and that's the son of a bitch I'm telling you about. And what he was saying is he was, because I talked to one of the guys that he was telling the story to, he was saying, when he went overboard, he told the boat to keep setting, and then he told the skiff man to go back and just bring me in with the net. And that's not what happened. But that's what he saw. And so I kind of laughed about that, and there's a little legend in Petersburg about that because it happened to two guys in the same weekend. One guy got hung upside down and was brought back in. But this is the hat that I had when I went over. And those goddamn Norwegians, you know, I don't know what to say about them, but I only wear this hat when I'm on the water. So something must have rubbed off. I don't know. Thank you.
Tell Us Something would like to thank the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, staff, and faculty of the University of Montana, as well as the general Missoula community, montanabookstore.com. The Top Hat, regularly bringing Missoula great live music, now with food, tophatlounge.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact, factandfictionbooks.com. Jonathan Marquise, illustrator, artist, and community organizer, jonathanmarquise.com, that's Marquise with a Q. Matt LaRubio, screen printing done right, mlarubio@gmail.com. Rock and Rudy's, your source for funky gifts, cards, and music. Great people, great music, rockandrudys.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at cashforjunkersmusic.com. Find us on twitter.com/PSSTTELLUS. That's twitter.com/tellus. Also on Facebook and at tellussomething.org. Interested in telling a story? Call 406-203-4683 or email tellussomething@gmail.com. That's PSSTTELLUS.something@gmail.com to pitch your story. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Thanks for listening.